All right, it is time for another episode of the Cultural Hall, and well, there's a big old panel of us here. Myself, I'm Richie T.
I'm Ashley Garby Smith.
I'm Brother Kyle.
And your life at the party DJ, Rob Fiery.
Friday.
Oh, really?
I like to change my name every week.
As much as you can. You get the fine button-up shirt today.
Yes.
With the second button a little unbuttoned.
I know, seriously. Oh.
You getting a little crazy, Rob?
Right. I just wanted to look good for our guest today.
Oh, and our guest. Is that working? Our guest today is from Radio West. That's a national, international program. He's right here in the Cultural Hall with us. Doug Fabrizio, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
I'm very excited about this today.
I know. She drove. Now, Doug, just so you know, she's not always here for every episode anymore. She abandoned us a long time ago.
She told me.
But
really? That's great.
She came all the way up, 40 minutes, is that probably?
Yeah, about.
Got a babysitter, yep. So mm-hmm. She's paying to be here. With you.
I'm just honored. So I can interview you. Yeah, I'm great. Very excited.
Right. I'm ready. Sort of.
And Rob's got nothing better going on. And
I'm unemployed. So
so why not? Sure, I may as well be here.
So we wanted to talk with you, Doug, because you're media. I mean, that's really, that's you're everything about media. And we've talked several times over here about this so-called kind of Mormon moment.
Yeah.
But before we go that far, let's get to know you a little bit for people go, who, Doug? Who's that guy?
Right.
Where were you born?
I was born in Bountiful. Yeah? Salt Lake City, but raised in Bountiful, Utah.
Sleepy little community north of Salt Lake.
Yeah,
sleepy.
That's where I live now. It's not so sleepy.
Do you live in Bountiful?
Yeah, I do.
Where?
I
you mean shouldn't say that?
Yeah, shouldn't say.
I thought you were going to like.
You can say.
I'm about to move.
Yeah.
In Bountiful, up near Mueller Park.
Okay. Yeah, I grew up in East Bountiful.
Yeah.
So I get it.
Are you a brave?
No, my kids are braves.
That's the mascot of Bountiful High School.
Bountiful High School. Yeah,
doesn't know what a brave is.
You went to Woods Cross.
No,
Beaumont.
Beaumont High School.
So where actually, I went also were former
seriously?
Both of Vikings.
Well,
yes.
Here's the thing. So I was in the Bountiful boundaries actually growing up, but I wanted to be in radio or something like it. And they didn't have at Beaumont, they didn't have at Bountiful High School. They had this really, I'm sure it's dreadful if you look back on it now, but it was pretty cool. They had a radio program and mm-hmm. a TV program at Beaumont. So that was my way to transfer. And all my friends were going to this place. So I transferred to Beaumont.
So how did you know that you wanted to do it? That seems pretty early. Most of us haven't even figured out yet what we want to
right.
do with our life.
I think that this is the thing. I mean, I don't think it was radio and TV I wanted to do, but I think that, well, I know what I wanted to do. I wanted to be an actor.
Like, really?
I was all about theater. No, absolutely. So I studied theater in college, and that was the idea, is I wanted to do that. And I think maybe the radio and TV thing was just, you know, I don't know if this is the case for you guys, but it's a performance of sorts, and so mm-hmm. I think that's what's appealing, right? That's what was appealing about radio for me when I chickened out, because that's what happened. I mean, I grew up wanting to. I mean, the idea was I was going to go. I got a scholarship to the University of Utah,
really,
in the theater department, and I'd gone around and done auditions to different places, and then the university had a, and they may still. So I, you know, I'm not impugning the integrity of the theater department at the U, but then it was really great.
Mm-hmm.
And may still be, but it had a really great reputation. And
you had a scholarship and?
Scholarship to go to the theater department at the University of Utah. So I went and...
Then you wussed out.
It wussed out. Seriously, I had no bones about it. I really just...
So what did you end up getting your degree in?
Well, I did get a degree in theater.
Okay.
I got a degree in Spanish. Minors,
okay.
Right?
Uh-huh. Same with me, yeah.
Is that right?
We're on the same path.
Yeah. And then I got
you could be as good looking as he is one day, Rob.
I could.
And then I got a button unbuttoned.
But then
what
I did. It's at the point where I chickened out. Because I was.
Was it family? Because a lot of people do that. How am I ever going to support the family chickening out?
Totally, though. That was absolutely it. And I think it had something to do with, like, we're all from this place and we understand this culture. And it was kind of the cultural expectation was that you did something reasonable. You know, it's like. And in any place, when you pronounce to your parents that you want to study English lit or something like mm-hmm. that, like, what are you going to do with a poetry degree or whatever? And the same thing kind of was with me. It was like, how am I going to make money out of this? Now, the plan was that I would go to New York and, you know, wait tables and just audition. But
what happened?
I think I was really scared about the idea.
So did you just stay in Utah?
Yeah.
Were you married at the time when you would have gone to New York?
No.
No?
Not yet.
So you didn't have anything like that settling
in
your
But it was pending, you know? I mean, it was sort of always on the horizon. And so I chickened out, totally chickened out. And I feel like, you know, I don't want to have regrets in my life. Like, you make your call and you do what you do. But that is one thing that I feel regretful about, is that I didn't kind of go for that.
So we can look forward to you maybe going in your later years out to New York and making a go out of it?
You know, I've done... From time, like I'm doing right now, as a matter of fact, with Plan B Theater Company with
that's
Bill.
That's a theater here in Salt Lake.
Right.
What are you doing with them?
Well, they do these radio plays from time to time.
Cool.
And they haven't done them, they stopped doing them a year ago or so, and they're doing a Sherlock Holmes thing this.
It's like an old timey radio show, essentially, isn't it? With Foley sound and that.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. And they've done Frankenstein. I did Frankenstein a couple of years ago, which was really fun. So I like. I don't think I'm. You know, it's like a muscle. You have to really practice it. So I don't think I'm that good. I think if I were to, I was really confident that I could do it. Then and now, I feel kind of like I suck. I'm terrible at it. But
I want to know some of the roles you did.
Yeah, high school, what were you?
High school, I was Oscar in, you know, everyone did a Neil Simon. I was in high school, which was a lot longer ago than you guys, but Neil Simon, Odd Couple, so I was Oscar.
There you go.
Yeah.
Finian's Rainbow, I was Finian.
Well.
Did you remember Finian's Rainbow? It was one of those great old musicals.
I just know the song. Look to the rainbow.
Yeah, exactly, and that was me.
There you go.
Can you do a little bit for us?
No, I can't. You know, I can't remember any of that hardly at all. It's one of those repressed memories. I mean, I remember... sort of good parts about it.
Uh-huh.
I remember, I have to say, I do remember this. I remember, like, in Bountiful, we had a really strong tradition of community.
And still so, there.
Yeah. No, it's good, right?
It's huge.
So, do you do it?
My family's into it.
Yeah. No, and so we, I did all kinds of community theater. I was really, I can't curse on, you know, I was really, I won't. I was really scared. because I was trying to fit into that weird peer group between the jocks, which I hung out with, and the theater kids, right? And I was trying to sort of find my way, but I loved theater. But I hung out with the jocks.
Yeah, but I don't want to love theater, everyone. You hear that, jocks? I'm not loving theater. I mean, it's cool or
exactly,
whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. So I remember I would really kind of go around on the sly behind some of my other friends and dug theater. Absolutely love it. You know, but just chorus stuff. You know, you're in the chorus for Carousel, Cinderella.
Were you one of the mice? No, I'm just
kidding. I was in the Cinderella musical was... Have you ever? Do you know it?
I'm familiar with it. Enough
Rodgers
to know
and
that there's
Hammerstein?
Not mice.
Exactly. Yes. No,
oh, it's not the Cinderella. Really? Cinderella.
No. It's way better.
No, it's 10 minutes ago.
That's exactly
that
right. Did you do theater?
Yes, I did.
Love.
I just know Rindersella. Not Cinderella, but I know the Rindersella.
Oh, is that which one is that?
You don't know that one?
No.
Oh, it's huge in you're not from Bountiful. Rindersella. They do it every year.
Oh,
at one of the local
I think I may have heard of this. Right. Which is this, the one in Cinderella?
Yeah, it's the twisted version of Cinderella.
Okay, no, terrible. I can't say I know
what,
it.
Now, what year did you graduate? Is that too personal to go there?
1982. So it's been a while.
So trying to think if we went to school together.
Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah. We were close.
Really?
Yeah, I wasn't in when you were there, but close behind.
Huh. Yeah. No, I didn't know. I don't know Rindersella. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
There is.
This interview's over. Rindersella.
That was done. That was the thing. Yeah.
Out of here.
No, so I loved it, and I was always trying to kind of negotiate between those two, you know, peer groups. And I eventually made it work, but I was really chicken then, even. That seems to be a theme in my life.
So did you play sports? Because you're friends with the jocks, so.
Yeah, no, I played sports. But
what'd you play?
I played football because I was fast.
Yeah?
Really fast.
He's just a little guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But. Wanted to play baseball, but I could never make the team. Much to my dismay, because I'm a huge baseball fan, and could never do it. Felt stupid. My kids are decent athletes. Mm-hmm. They didn't get it from me, but I just hung out with the jocks. You know, played football sort of. But here's the thing, though. When I was a senior in high school, I had to make the call: do I want to be in the school play? Which this was the Oscar, The Odd Couple. Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And I had to make that call: if be on the football team or be in the play. Like, what are you really going to do? And I ditched football, which was a big deal. And my friends were like, what are you doing?
What, are you going to go do them plays?
And it was kind of like coming out. I have to say, on some levels, it was like me saying, no, look, I'm not going to be in football. And I don't really, football's fine, but it's not that great, you guys. I really want to be in theater. And so, you know, and I was always a ham anyway. They got that. So it was kind of a turning point in some ways. It was like me feeling like I could do it. And it was great. I loved it. So that was the thing. I mean, I was going to, so I did community theater. I did You know, when you are with a university, if you've been in the university theater program, you're basically an indentured servant.
Oh yeah,
for the, you know what I mean. Yeah. Like, and they get free labor out of you.
You run shows for them. You have to work on the shows in order to get your lighting credits and stuff like that.
All lighting that stuff.
Or curtain pulling. This table. That's what you'll be doing in this performance. Moving this table from stage left to stage right. Be here every night for 5 hours. I did a show like that.
That's what I was, a theater minor for a while, and once I heard about that stuff, I quit it.
Really?
Because I'd rather do TV. Yeah. That was more fun for me. Instead of doing somebody's lighting, I'd rather be... That's what I did.
So you chickened, though. So then how did it get you to do this little silly thing you do on radio?
Well, I think what I was thinking was I'd always been an NPR fan.
Mm-hmm. You know? This American Life?
Yeah. I mean, I liked... There wasn't a This American Life, by the way, when I started. But there was... Here's what the thing...
There was barely radio when he started.
it was in its infancy, kind of. I mean, this was the mid to late 80s, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And NPR had gone through this really dicey time in the mid 80s where they almost went under.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then there was this program called Weekend All Things Considered.
Right.
And they still have it now, but we, at the time, KUER, where
which is
I work
where
right
you
now,
work.
They didn't carry it.
How come?
I don't remember why, to be honest with you, because I was like volunteering. And we would get the show off the satellite. And this was in the days of real... Man, this is making me sound really old, but in the days of reel-to-reel machines.
Back in the day, physical tape record things
so
onto.
So we would get it, and it was such a great show in those days, because Ira Glass, who does This American Life, he was one of the young producers on that show. And they had guys like... Well, I'll mention names that they won't necessarily mean anything to you, but Alex Chadwick and Ira Glass and Jay Allison and Scott Carrier and a lot of these guys who were doing really amazing radio. Independent,
I know who Scott Carrier is. Yeah,
really great radio pieces. And we weren't even airing this thing. So I would listen to it. So I said to the management, I said, would there be any chance I could do a show on a Sunday night at, I think, 7? We'll call it Sunday Journal. And the friend of mine, who Kelly Spratlin was her name. She was a colleague of mine at the communication department. And we proposed this idea for a show, and we'll take these stories that Ira was producing that we were, you know, because I'd never heard stuff like that, and I wanted to air them, and I wanted to make stories like that, you know, really great storytelling that was well edited and well thought out and really beautifully produced, and so that's where I really fell in love with it. And they said, sure, go for it. And can I use these stories? Sure, why not? We're not using them. So we created a magazine show. I was still a student, totally volunteer. Mm-hmm. And this was 89, 90, something like that.
Okay.
It was the first time I went on the air. Because we would do a live, like we'd pre-produce it during the week, the show. And then we'd do a live newscast.
Just go live,
the
hour
hell
long?
Out of me.
Yeah,
hour long. It was great. And that was what I liked about it was all the dynamics of theater. It was performance. I was directing it. I was writing, you were crafting. And the thing about stories, like especially stories like that Ira does, and you hear on a really terrific program called Radiolab.
Mm-hmm.
For those who don't know, it's genius.
Where can people find it?
Radiolab.org.
It's a podcast.
It's a podcast.
You can download
it. It's a terrific podcast.
It is
the best thing right now on radio.
It is.
It's unbelievable. A guy named Jad Abumrad and Robert Krolwich, who's an old NPR standby, produced this show. It's kind of about science, ostensibly, but it's more than that. It's really... just terrific storytelling.
Okay.
But that's how I got into radio, was to be able to craft stories like that. I didn't really care about the announcing part, because I'll be honest with you, like, I'm not crazy about the sound of my voice. I don't like the way my voice sounds. It's
really,
I know.
Oh, I'm the
really?
Same way.
Because I wanted to mention this, because actually I was going to mention this to you.
Okay.
The very first time I heard about you was I was listening to the morning radio show that you work for.
Allowed to mention the name of
yes.
it. Oh, is that right?
It's two separate entities. I get in trouble.
Okay.
Yes. Right. So, but actually this was years ago, probably 6 years ago. I was in college, and the hosts of the morning radio show were talking about your voice and how your voice is just so smooth, and they fall in love with your voice, and they wish that they had voices like you. And it was really funny, because I'm like, oh, who's Doug Fabrizio? I don't even know who they're talking about. So that's when I started listening to you. But I thought you sound very similar to Ira Glass, which is why I wonder if you get that comparison.
I do. And what I get about it is, you know, it's more kind of a tenory voice. It's a little bit more stuttery. I do a little bit more, you know, so especially when I'm answering, as you can tell, even when I'm just trying to articulate, I tend to be a really stammery. It's just the way I was a bit like that too.
Right.
And that was the thing that was appealing to me about public radio, was you didn't have to have the pipes. Like, you could have, and that's what I like about the conceit of the stuff I do now anyway, is it's it's really natural, you know, which is that's what I like. I like just being able to, because that's the thing that public radio was doing, I think, so well in those early days, was you could hear voices from people who didn't have, you know, deep authoritative sounding voices.
Hey, but they were coming just, to the radio.
Exactly.
Right.
And the writing was real. You know, it was completely authentic in terms of the way you were crafting a story. And that was the thing that was really appealing for me. So I figured, look, I don't have the greatest voice in the world, but it was a good fit. I think because of Ira, in a lot of ways, and there were other reporters who didn't have the perfect sounding voice that seemed to be making their way. And so it kind of was a fit for me, like right off the bat.
How terrible was your first show?
Terrible. The first show was you know, it was pre-produced, so it wasn't... I'll tell you, though, my first newscast, my voice went up like 2 octaves, and it's fairly tenory anyway. And I had a hard time controlling my breath, and I was completely cotton mouth. It was really terrifying. I mean, I've had a lot of fiascos on the air, or my share anyway. That wasn't a terrible... because it was pre-produced. But, I mean, there have been times when we used to do a show called Friday Edition. Mm-hmm. It was a magazine show that we stopped doing about 10 years ago. I was really proud of it. It was a magazine format show, and it was terrific. We'd go out and produce these pieces, and there were times, it's just, this is the nature of the business. I think when you're a reporter, you always work to the last, to the moment of your deadline. Mm-hmm. You know, you use every ounce of it. I certainly am that way. And so we were actually doing mixes. And these were the days when you were mixing on reel-to-reel tapes, by the way.
Jeez.
This was before digital. We were doing mixes live on the air. Multi-layered mixes, like ambience here, and you had sound quotes here. And we were doing a lot of them just live on the air. It was terrifying, but incredibly exciting. And sometimes it just was a disaster. Hmm. Which was fun to look back on, but at the time you just thought you were going to die.
Coming back in the second block here of the Cultural Hall, I want to talk about how you feel like the media is doing with everything with Mitt Romney, kind of the Mormon moment, and your take from kind of the media inside looking out. And we want to talk about the recent Rock Center, if you had an opportunity to see that program as well. So that's coming back in the second and perhaps the third block here of the Cultural Hall.
Sidewinder Media was named as one of Utah's top photographers by In This Week magazine and is a winner of several awards for fine art, portrait, and event photography. Sidewinder Media has been professionally photographing everything from wildlife to headshots for over 10 years. Sidewinder Media has the experience and the knowledge to capture your special occasion or portrait the way you want it. They also film and edit music or product videos and do simple ads for Facebook or websites. Email them at sidewindermedia@gmail.com or call Rusty at 801-941-5576 to book your shoot today.
It's time for the second block of the Cultural Hall. Thank you again for joining us, Mr. Fabrizio. I have to not look at him because he's so darn handsome.
There's a twinkle in my eye.
Yeah. When you see, does it, as he sits with his hands placed gently underneath his chin and goes, yes, Richie, tell me, please.
You're almost too good looking for radio.
Yeah, but he doesn't have a face for radio.
Richie fits radio.
Yeah, I fit perfectly. Yeah. Look at this.
You're deformed visage. Yeah.
Thank you for deformed. We didn't need to go there, but I'll take it. You know,
think about the teeth. Which look great, by the way.
No, they're fixed.
I know.
They're permanent. Look at those.
Are they permanent now?
Yeah. Can't take them out.
Terrific.
The wife insisted.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we wouldn't have made it this far. You guys want to know something really cool about me and D-Fab?
I do.
None of you guys knew. He and I won an Emmy Award together.
Wait, together?
Yeah.
You produced something?
Emmy.
Nope.
No, he was the subject. It was a show that I had come up with. It was when I used to do documentary films for KUED, Channel 7, you know? And, I'd come up with this idea of doing a... I'm not speaking in the mic.
There you go. Perfect.
A show about love. And just exploring kind of the abstract idea of, like, what is love and how do we relate to love? And I wanted to tell a few love stories. So we wanted people to talk about falling in love, like the good part of it. But I also needed someone who had been through a breakup, something really difficult. And how in the hell did we end up finding you? Do you remember how that worked?
You could smell my desperation and heartbreak, I'm sure. What is that?
That's Richie.
Was it when you were producing the morning show, though, because the radio show?
Yes.
Because everyone knew about your breakup.
No, and I think that's probably how I figured it out.
We had talked about it once or twice.
Yeah.
Stop it.
And so I thought, well, so I approached you and asked you if you'd be willing to do it. And it was great. You were great tape, as they say in the business.
Thank you.
I mean, really terrific, good. You were willing to kind of share your story.
Yeah, I was willing to be completely open.
I was kind of surprised about that. I know, where I'm not willing to be as open as you know. But I appreciated it a lot. It was really terrific. I thought it was one of the best storylines in the show, for sure. Because you were willing to be vulnerable. And It's still online, I think, isn't it?
Oh, really? I've got a copy of it.
Yeah.
I'd love to see it.
Just don't share it with my wife.
No, all right.
Because it's not my wife that we're talking about in the special. But that piece ended up winning an Emmy Award. A regional Emmy?
Yeah, regional Emmy. Yeah.
What was the official
best
award?
Best doc? I don't know. To be honest with you, I don't know.
I don't remember either. I never paid attention to a little claim. Part of an Emmy Award receiving.
Right.
He was great. He just told the story about the breakup and really how it drives you crazy. Sometimes when you're in that situation, it drives you crazy. And it was great. It was more than I expected, actually.
Well, if you need to do another one.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. Through it.
Okay. Rob is actually going to be coming out with a book here soon called I Should Have.
I have a book I want to write.
Really?
It's called Letters to My Ex-Girlfriends.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
I could help with a couple of those.
Yeah.
I could give the best friends perspective on some of that stuff.
All right.
Back to DFAB. Sorry, I didn't mean to distract. So, the Mormon moment.
Yeah.
You've heard it before, the phrase, right?
Yeah.
How would you best describe that for people who maybe haven't even heard Mormon moment and go, huh?
Well, I mean, the Mormon moment relates to the fact that there's been a lot of attention paid to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints over the past probably 2 years now. Certainly with Mitt Romney. Now that he clinched the nomination, it's big. But the
Book of Mormon.
Yeah, yes. We think.
And actually, here in this podcast, we call him President Romney. So,
Okay.
Just Richie does.
Yeah. But I think that certainly the Book of Mormon, the musical on Broadway, mm-hmm. raised the profile of Mormonism and the way people worship. And because I think a lot of people just thought of Mormonism as some kind of odd afterthought. They didn't really give it much of a thought. But now, with the potential of having a president who may be of this faith, I think people are starting to wonder what is it? And what does it, what does it mean? What do they believe? What are the basics? I think a lot of people are kind of creeped out by it. I think.
Really? What do you think?
Creeped out? In what way? Yeah.
Creeped out by Mormonism?
Yeah. How are people creeped out?
Yeah.
The temple ceremony they don't get, they've heard of. And, we're in the internet era, so they know all about the temple ceremony, this history of polygamy. Really? Does that surprise you that people are creeped out by Mormonism?
Yeah.
I don't know. I just really wanted you to speak more about.
Well, I mean, no, I mean, I think they are. And I think, they think of it, they've heard words, because they don't know much about it.
Yeah.
They hear the stories that are, the bad stories, I guess, certainly about polygamy is huge.
Sure.
But again, the Mormon temple ceremony.
Blacks in the priesthood, I'm sure.
Blacks in the priesthood is one. But I think the Mormon temple ceremony is one that really is confusing for a lot of people, like what goes on. So they think there's an era, kind of an aura of secrecy to it that I think that so people don't get it. And so I think they're really interested in the Mormon moment right now, like what Mormonism is and what it means and all those kinds of things.
But the media has had a significant impact on that. It seems like instead of it bleeds, it leads, it's Mormon, it leads right now. Being a media person and being here in Utah, how is that different for you or how do you decide on some of those things that you could talk about?
Well, I think the thing that interests me about the way it's told nationally is on our program and in the work that I've been doing, I've been talking about Mormonism for a long time, and all the different aspects of the different stories that are playing out. So I don't have to start again and say, it just so happened a 15-year-old boy went into the woods and had this experience, and this is what Mormons believe. But when you're seeing national stories, I think we actually may be moving on this, beyond this at some point. But every time you see a national story, they've got to introduce the Genesis story of Mormonism because people don't – that's a basic element of the story.
Sure.
Right.
And I don't have to worry about that. I go in there for the most part – with the presumption that people have a basic sense of what Mormonism is in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's good because I can then move on. The whole idea about, I think, good journalism is progressing the story. Here's the story, but what about it? What mm-hmm. about this particular thing? What about blacks in the priesthood? What's the relationship with African-Americans or blacks now? Like you can dig, as opposed to just having to talk about something in the past, you can move on and talk about where it sits now. So that's my frustration with seeing national coverage right now. The BBC, not so long ago, they were in our studio producing a series of stories. London fascinated with Mormonism. And, they always go to the MTC. It seems like they all do the same things, mm-hmm. which I get. I mean, you would, the MTC, why would someone go for 2 years and give up, you know, in their most raging hormonal part of their lives, they go off and they are celibate for 2 years and they go and do this thing.
Why Some of them are celibate, I guess.
Right. And, you know, they go, you know, they do this, all the same kinds of things. It's just, to me, that's not terribly interesting because, you know, I'm interested in deeper parts of that story. So that's what's interesting to me is that everyone's sort of telling a very basic story, which to me is not that telling. I'm more interested in
like what
deeper
type,
stuff.
What types of things have you gotten into with your program? Some of these
Well,
deeper
I'm
things.
I'm interested in Mormonism. Well, a couple of things. Let's see. People who lose faith. I'm very interested in like there's this thing going on right now in Christianity because Christianity is so old. People have a relationship to it that is like they don't believe Jonah was swallowed by a whale. Like they don't have to believe there was an
ark. It was symbolic, Doug.
It was symbolic, right?
It wasn't really swallowed by a whale. It's how our problems can consume us.
Exactly. So Christians have been thinking about this for a long time. And some people still are absolutely, you look at the evangelical movement, for example, still very much literal in the way they believe the Bible. But tons of, you know, Christians think, no, these are stories that are meant to explain to us our relationship with God and our, you know, our relationship with each other, all of those kinds of things. But I don't believe literally this happened. Thomas Jefferson, big believer in Jesus Christ as a philosopher, didn't believe he resurrected. He cut out all the miracles in the New Testament and created his own, Thomas Jefferson created his own New Testament that didn't include the supernatural part, mm-hmm. you know? So everyone sort of comes to it in a different way. I think Mormonism is maturing to the point where you're finding Mormons who don't necessarily believe the Joseph Smith story. They believe that, well, he wasn't like the Book of Mormon wasn't a fraud, mm-hmm. but that it may have been some sort of ecstatic experience that he had, that he created this thing that, you know, because there's a lot of problems in the Book of Mormon, you know, in terms of, you know, tools and chariots and horses and all this stuff. Everyone, you know, so a lot of Mormons just say, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to me if it actually happened that way.
Sure.
It doesn't matter to me if Jesus Christ actually came to this continent. This is a story that is part of our history. So you're finding Mormons, and this wasn't the case for Mormons, I think, for a long time ago. But you're finding, I think, some Mormons who are able to think in more flexible ways about, they still want to be Mormon.
Mm-hmm.
Because they like the community or they still believe in the relationship with God. You know what? A lot of people, they like how Mormonism provides such a personal access to God.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one thing that's super unique about Mormonism.
The opportunity to pray for yourself and be able to receive personal revelation.
Right, right. Okay. And just also that you don't have to go through anyone else to get to God. That God is right there. I mean, that's an appealing idea for a lot of people. And so they like that part and they may not like this part. And, you know, gay rights is a huge issue within Mormonism right
sure.
now. And a lot of people are saying, I don't believe this part of Mormonism. I don't believe that God would exclude gay people from the celestial kingdom or whatever, you know,
right.
the whole thing. And so people are sort of, they're taking different things. Some people are ditching it entirely, of course.
Sure.
Some people don't want to do that. Some people like going to church on Sunday. They like going to Sunday school. They love their neighbors. They like the ceremony of it. They like blessings and baptisms and 2.5 minute talks and all those aspects. You know, they love all that part of it, but they don't necessarily believe everything. So they may not be vocal about it because that may mean something. That may mean that, you know, somebody may question. So they don't really talk about it. But, you know, I hear from these people all the time. So I'm interested in that more flexible kind of Mormon
mm-hmm.
and whether or not Mormonism can sustain its, you know, because it's been incredibly successful for reasons because it's been pretty down the line.
Very orthodox.
Right.
Very orthodox. But you're seeing people who almost defining themselves like Jews do. I'm a Reform Mormon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not an Orthodox Mormon. I don't believe in the temple, for example, ordinances or whatever, and I don't wear a garment, you know, mm-hmm. the garments or whatever. You know, so it's really, right now it's really, I'm just really interested to see how the church is going to deal with that. Because because Mormonism's really young,
mm-hmm.
you know? And this is the point that the guys who do South Park were making about Mormonism when they did, you know, the South Park about it and the Book of Mormon musical, that why would the idea of Christ coming to the Americas be any more ridiculous than a sacrament, a piece of bread turning into the actual bread, the actual
body of Christ,
like Catholics believe,
right?
Like, or that there was a virgin birth. That's, you know, people who are not believing would say that's absurd, but that's no more ridiculous than the idea of a young boy being visited by two personages in a sacred grove. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that's kind of the point. But because it's so young, Mormonism's so relatively young, in the sort of Christian experience, it's harder for other people to take.
So go ahead.
I'm sorry. Do you think the media has caused this movement? Because we have access to the internet and we have access to a lot more information than we did before. I mean, do you think it's a movement, and do you think the media has helped progress this movement of reformed Mormons, like you were talking about?
I don't think there's any doubt. And I don't know what you mean by media, though. I mean, what do you mean by that exactly?
Well, I just mean
access to information.
Exactly. No,
there you're right. I'm not sure if like the news media has influenced it necessarily. I mean, although they may have. But I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I remember, you know, look, it used to be, there was a BYU professor who talked to us not so long, it's been a couple years ago, about the fact that young people now, have access to the internet, and they can read all of the stories about Mormonism, good and bad.
Right.
And they can learn, he said, there's no keeping from them the fact that the first vision has five different versions.
Mm-hmm.
Like, officially, there are five different versions. When Joseph Smith first reported, you know, seeing God and Jesus, that wasn't the story that he first told. It was different. Mm-hmm. So young Mormons now have access to stories like that, other part, because of the internet. And if they wanted, they could look at the temple ceremony. I mean, you know, there's no hiding
any of this stuff anymore.
And I'm not implying that they were keeping things from people. I'm not implying that at all. But yes, young people now have access to all of this information. So they come at their faith without any kind of, for the most part, romantic illusions about it. They know it. And in some ways, that could either make you lose faith,
mm-hmm.
or it could make your faith so much more durable.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Because, look, I know all the crap. I know what, like, if you read Rough Stone Rolling,
right.
you know, which
Bushman's book.
Richard Bushman's book, a brilliant book about Joseph Smith. And it talks about some really dicey behavior by the founder of Mormonism, by Joseph Smith. Kind of creepy stuff. There's no doubt about it. And so if you read that book, if you come at it, as opposed to putting him up on this grand pedestal as this perfect figure, mm-hmm. a lot of Mormons are coming at their leaders as more flawed, mm-hmm. imperfect. But the thing that's funny about it, if you look through Mormon scripture, the Doctrine and Covenants in particular, Joseph Smith is constantly chiding himself, or God is constantly chiding Joseph Smith for blowing it. Constantly.
You really messed up here.
What are you doing? You got to repent. All these kinds of. So why anyone would think anyway that there's this Vaseline, you know, thing over the lens for Mormonism is crazy in the first place. But mm-hmm. I think the younger generation of Mormons have, yes, they have more information. So they're seeing their faith in a different light. It's also, I would guess, causing more younger people to lose their faith, to say, wait, because nobody told me that in primary.
Right.
So what the hell?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I think that a little bit of that is going. People feel really disillusioned by it, betrayed in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's having a contributing factor too.
Well, that's what you're saying exactly is we see these movies in primary or in church of Joseph Smith, perfect person.
Right.
All these adaptations of him and his life, and then what we learn in church, we never learn these other things, that he was a rough stone rolling.
Yep.
He was imperfect like all of us.
Right.
And so when we come across these things, they will certainly shake our faith because we had no idea that the church didn't come out. So do you think there is a way that the church can come out and kind of help smooth these things over?
I think there is I suppose there's a way. I don't know. I mean,
come on, tell the church what to do.
I mean, that's the thing. I think if you look at, I don't know, I can't really speak for them, but I think if you were to look, it would be interesting to say, look at your Sunday school manual.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Is it changed?
Sure.
How?
A little bit.
How?
Well, now you put me on the spot. Let me think.
The young women's manuals have not, I will tell you that much.
Really?
They're very similar.
The Gospel Principles Sunday School manual hasn't really changed. It's still just the basic tenets of the church, though. It's, you know, it's your fasting, it's your tithing, it's your, you know, keeping the Sabbath day holy.
Yeah. And so I don't know. I mean, I think that's part of the answer. I think, how would they deal with it? I know this. I do know that church leaders are worried mm-hmm. about retention rates for young people.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the numbers, some of the studies that have been done, you know, younger people, and I think women, they're really worried about younger women in the church. That, and I don't know why. I can't say I know why, and I can't say I even understand the dynamic. I wouldn't speak for any of these people who've done these studies, but you're starting to see retention problems big time among young people in American Mormonism. Mm-hmm. And I think that's interesting. I don't know why. I have no idea why. And maybe one of the answers would be, all right, be a little bit more, I don't want to use honest because that makes it sound like they're being dishonest now, but be a little bit more clear-eyed.
More forthright?
More forthright about some of the stories of the past. And I think you hear on one end, you hear from Orthodox leaders of the church saying, you have to give them milk before meat. Mm-hmm. Like, let's not talk about all of the, you know, all the deep cosmology. They don't need to hear that Joseph. They don't need to hear that Joseph Smith married, you know, a 17-year-old girl in the first lesson on Joseph Smith.
Right.
We're just giving them gospel principles, very basic things, and they can learn about the difficult things later. We're not opposed to that, but we won't do it. So you hear that, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's reflected in the Young Women's Manual and the Sunday School manuals and all that stuff is really straightforward stuff. Still pretty gauzy, though, and it's, you know, impression of all of these stories, which is, you know, I my sense of it anyway. But then you're hearing the other side, which is, you know, people saying, I think, you know, Mormons take great pride in their testimony. Mm-hmm. Something, you know, the conversion experience. And I'm assuming the audience knows what that is, right?
Sure. Right.
So, you know, Mormons take great pride in their testimony that it was fought after, you know, this conversion experience gave you this deep abiding sense of your relationship to God, your sense of the truthfulness of the gospel or the truthfulness of Mormonism or whatever it might be. And I think what some people are saying is, they're saying to leaders, you should trust that it's stronger than, that they're not going to be thrown off course by some story that might make somebody who's a flawed human being anyway look like a flawed human being. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't have to paint, you know. So you're hearing that. That's the dynamic I'm hearing right now within Mormonism. And I don't know how it'll end up, but it's really interesting. I think that's one thing that's going on within Mormonism, internally within Mormonism, is how much do we say, how much do we tell our young people, how much can they take, you know?
Right.
Coming back in the third block, I want to talk more about this because we kind of, this all started with one question of, you know, what are the different things that you like to delve into as far as Mormonism goes. That's one. We'll come back and see if there are a couple more in the third block here of the Cultural Hall.
Hey, it's me, Richie T. Want to take a second and tell you about my buddy Dylan over at Lennon Design. Go to LennonDesign.com to see some of the stuff that he's done. Or, you know what, better yet, go to theculturalhall.com and look at all the graphic stuff that we have there at that website. You know who's done that? Dylan at Lennon Design. He's offering a special deal for people in the Cultural Hall, a 10% discount. You know why it's 10%, right? And all you have to do is just give him a call, 801-699-3022. Any sort of graphic artwork or website design that you might need, give him a call. Think about Lennon Design. You know, they sponsor your favorite podcast.
All right, time now for the third block of the Cultural Hall. Doug, you're doing fine. Stop worrying.
No, I always worry.
You shouldn't worry so much.
I know.
It kind of surprises me that you're as worried as you are.
Well, I'm worried because I don't like talking about myself. So as you can tell, I'm not.
Yeah, I really. Okay.
You want to ask a follow-up question, right?
You want to ask a follow-up question to that I won't receive an answer to.
Yeah, you won't. So
so you were saying that part of the thing that was interesting to you is kind of this falling away or this kind of reformed Mormonism movement. What other things as a journalist, as a media guy, do you find interesting, or what other stories have you done in the kind of this Mormon moment?
Well, I'm really interested in gay rights and Mormonism and how the interplay between them, because this is a really difficult issue right mm-hmm. now, I think, for Mormonism for a couple of reasons. And I think we've talked to people who would say that that Mormon leaders underestimated the effects of the Prop 8 battle.
Prop 8, for people who don't know.
Yeah. Prop 8 was the battle back in 2008 in California that the LDS Church was very much involved in, that would have deprived gay people of their access to gay marriage, to marriage. And, you know, they went all in, which I think surprised some people, and they really held the water for a lot of religious organizations, the Catholic Church, evangelicals, and the Mormon Church, absolutely, you know, like they're, you know, really good at. They mobilized members, and it became a really divisive, in some cases, situation. And I think there's some question now among Mormon leaders just what it cost them in terms of their public image. Mm-hmm. So I think there is some sense among some. I think you're getting some sense that that the church may be rethinking or trying to make up for that. I don't know if that's true. I have no idea. But there's some question, and how they're doing that is they're reaching out to the gay community.
I don't think that there's any question. You say that you think that there's some question as to whether they're doing that. To me, in my mind, and what I've seen in the last 4 years, it appears that there's no question.
It seems clear to me, but...
Okay, what have we done? This wasn't maybe necessarily Christ-like, or maybe it was, but we didn't have any idea how this was going to be. Let's go in this effort.
Well, I think the first thing that really got it going was the guy who committed suicide on the steps of the church in the Bay Area. And that kind of really got pushed everything to the forefront. And so now there's more of a dialogue. I know that they do. There's firesides now for same gender attraction for those people. It's kind of like it's sponsored by like a stake, you know. Mm-hmm. And so there's certain things that are it's progressing now. I think they're just going to eventually get there. There's even get to a point where. Yeah. Good point.
Yeah,
and that's the
where are they going to get?
Well, that is the big question for a lot of people.
But wait, how would you answer that?
I acceptance. I
acceptance of what?
Acceptance of people for who they are and what they. I would think that's where we want to get. I don't know if marriage is.
I was going to say marriage because I don't think the church will ever
say you don't think that.
No, ever. I don't think they ever will.
I say ever as a question mark. You don't think that'll ever.
I don't think they will.
I disagree.
Really?
I don't think that it will ever become. This is progressive and not church doctrine, and genuinely the way that I feel though, I think that at some point you will be able to be married same sex within the Mormon church, but not it won't be temple marriage.
See, this is the stuff that interests me. I'm really interested in the way young or whatever age, doesn't matter, but the way Mormons are sitting down talking about what, because you know gay people, right?
Absolutely.
And so where do they fit in the eternal scheme? This is, you know, the way a lot of Mormons think, not just how does it play out here, but then, okay, wait a minute. So where are they going to end up?
Right.
And if we believe, like as if, you know, I think a lot of Mormons are asking themselves, if we believe that these relationships are eternal, then what happens to my really good friend who's gay? What happens to them in the end run? Does God cure them and make them then heterosexual in the eternal life? The other questions I think that a lot of people are asking is, then what does it mean? So I think right now, you know, I think leaders are able to say, of course you can be gay and Mormon.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But what I think a lot of people in the gay community are saying is, no, you can't. Because I can be gay, but I can't be who I am, which means I can't be sexual.
And mm-hmm. Exactly.
Because you and that's what a lot of them are saying too is you say that sex is only, you know, is only right within the bounds of marriage. Mm-hmm. And what gay people are saying is, got it. I'll do that.
So let us get married.
Let me get married.
Exactly.
Right? So the question is, can you be fully a person and gay and Mormon? I don't know. I mean, I think I'm really interested in having that conversation with people because you hear it from all over the place. And you're having Kendall Wilcox is a perfect example. I don't know if you know who he is.
Yeah. He's been on
episode 42 of the cultural.
Is that right? So he's terrific. I mean, he's the one that's been working through all of these questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In a really interesting way. And he's fascinating to talk to because he doesn't want to forego Mormonism.
No, he loves it.
It's like and what's interesting is if you think about it, and I think a lot of Mormons say this, Mormonism is who I am. It's in my core.
Right.
But then by the same token, they also say, my heterosexuality is who I am in my core.
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And gay people say the same thing. So they don't want to give one or the other up.
Right.
You know, so they don't want to discard one. They want to make them both fit. Mm-hmm. And right now, it's a tough fit for some people. You know what I mean? So that's another thing I'm really interested in, the gay community and its relationship with Mormonism, and the way Mormons within, you know, are trying to work through that stuff. I mean, I have to say, I think it was a really important moment at the Gay Pride Parade this year.
Yes.
When you had mm-hmm. active Mormons come in their Sunday clothes and march. And not just here, but I think in 13 different communities, mm-hmm. Mormons. That to me seemed like a really important moment. You know, and so I'm really interested in the way that's all headed. And like you said, I think there are a lot of people who say there's no way that they'll ever let it happen. And there are others like you, Richie, who say, no, I can kind of see it.
I don't think it's soon. No, I don't think it's coming tomorrow.
It would be great. No. I just don't. No, I don't right. no, think I the know. Church
I,
will
I,
ever.
I think there are a lot of people who say that.
Yeah. Can we relate it to blacks in the priesthood?
Totally. I think a lot of people do relate it. Now, a lot of people don't want to make the connection. Yeah. But a lot of people are saying, if this was 1975, say, mm-hmm. there were a lot of people in 1975 who were saying, there is no way. Because this is a mandate from God. We don't understand it, but for some reason God said blacks can't have the priesthood. And then all of a sudden 3 years later, it changed. Mm-hmm. And people were working through it. They were really confused by it.
Right.
You know, some were saying, I'm not a member of this church anymore. I don't want to do it because of that. And then it changed. And people thought that that was inconceivable that it would change. Mm-hmm. And then there was all that talk at the time, is it a doctrine? Or is it a, or is it, what was the question? Was it, is it a doctrine or is it a policy?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
That was a big thing Mormons were working through. And all it was them trying to sort of divine what was the mind of God. So in 1978, was it this, that God all of a sudden said, hello, yes, of course. Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't, I've been trying to tell you for this time.
Exactly. And thank you, Spencer Kimball, for figuring this out. Or was it, now it's time. Mm-hmm. For you to give the blacks, I'm not going to tell you why, you know, and wherever you stand on that, I don't know, but I just think it's really interesting the way Mormons are trying to reconcile their sense of it all and how it fits. Anyway, that's sort of my point. That's what is interesting to me about Mormonism is how Mormons who are of faith,
yeah,
and who are leaving the faith or are not sure about the faith, how are they working through all of these questions? That to me is what's really interesting.
All right, so I am going to ask one question because, and this is personal, but it's okay. You don't need to be evasive. We ask this question of everyone, yeah. And you can answer it however you choose.
Okay.
What is your favorite part about your faith?
My favorite part of my faith is study.
How do you mean?
Like, I like to explore the way people think. And, you know, for me, it's about, I always figure that faith is about, to me, a reflection of what kind of a father am I? Kind of a husband am I? Kind of a neighbor am I? Yeah. Right? Like, that to me is really important. Like, and what am I doing that's, like, I'd want to forget all the other stuff sometimes and just sort of focus in on that. And so I'm trying to always figure that out. So for me, it's about study. It's about looking deeper into history and not just scripture, but philosophy. Because I think that informs my sense of faith, my sense of spirituality. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this. If people wanted to find you, where can they find you? We ask people to climb up on the Ramayumptum and declare where people can find them and everything like that. So take a minute and...
Well, our show is, it's called Radio West, and it's broadcast daily from 11 to noon, Mountain Standard Time. It's also rebroadcast at 7 if you're in the Salt Lake City, Utah area.
Okay.
And is it syndicated in other cities?
It's syndicated with XM Public Radio.
Oh, cool.
So you can really get it anywhere in the country and in Canada. Mm-hmm. And maybe ever elsewhere, too. I'm not really sure. But again, 11 Mountain Standard Time. But it's podcast. That's how you hear it.
Right.
And that's
where would I go to get the podcast?
Of course. KUER.org.
Okay.
Is it on iTunes?
It is.
How do you find it on iTunes?
If you go on iTunes, you just type in Radio West in the search, and it will pull up the podcast Radio West. So.
Glad you said that.
Why no Facebook, Doug?
I'm just trying to, I think there are three basics to doing a good interview.
Okay.
One is be prepared. And I take a lot of pride in that.
Mm-hmm. We take no pride in that.
Clearly.
Two is to listen. You know, pay attention. Be observant. Mm-hmm. That's two. But three, then, is remember that it's not about you. And so for me, I think as you can tell by my evasion today and just in general, I tend to try to kind of keep my life to myself because I think it makes me a better journalist.
Yeah, we definitely turned the tables on you today.
Yeah, you did. I probably said something I shouldn't have.
Oh, I'm sure. And we'll replay it in a loop over and over again. And this is going to the Huffington Post as soon as we get down here.
Absolutely.
So. I just wonder because I looked that up and I was going to be like, oh, I'll contact him on there. And you're harder to get in touch with.
Like, I don't feel like a Luddite. I feel plugged into all kinds of different social media. But
tweet?
I don't tweet. And I'm not opposed to it. I swear to you, I'm not.
Mm-hmm. It's just not your character.
I'm not really.
He's just better than that.
No, seriously, it's not.
He doesn't have a TV in his house because he doesn't watch television.
Twitter. Do you ever follow Danny Zucker, the writer, comedian? I found some really amazing. Ai Weiwei, the Chinese dissident, has a terrific Twitter feed. Danny Zucker, comedian. He writes for Modern Family.
Okay.
Hysterical. I never thought it would interest me much, 140 characters. But what I like about it is the discipline where you have to be funny or you have to be profound or whatever.
Right.
Right.
Not very many people are, but when you
very
find
few.
Them.
So go into the gym. Follow.
Exactly. Exactly. Boil. I have a boil. But I mean, I really am just bowled over by some that can do it. And when they do it well, it's impressive. Well, I don't think I could do it well.
Quick question. Hopefully it's not a... hopefully it is a quick question. Who are some of your favorite interviews that you've done within the church or with outside of the church with Radio West?
Well, within I think one of the best spokespeople for Mormonism right now is Joanna Brooks.
Love her. She's been a guest as well.
She's been here.
Yeah. Yes. I love her for all kinds of different reasons. I actually think she is by far and away the best person to convey to people outside and inside the Mormon experience.
Yeah.
And I think it's because if you read her book, she's one who has told her personal story.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it's great. You know, and so she has a kind of credibility that's astounding, but she's just great tape. She's incredibly articulate. So I love talking to her. She was in town last week.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yep. She came by and read a part of her book to me.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So you can find it at theculturalhall.com.
Cool. I mean, I'm always looking for excuses to get her on the show because mm-hmm. because there's so much to talk about with Mormonism. I think it's really interesting, especially now, and the way it's changing and the way people are thinking. And look, I also don't want to give the impression that I'm not interested in people who are devout, who stay because they do believe that, you know, the Mormon story. They absolutely believe it. Absolutely. You know, I'm not uninterested in them by any stretch at all. I don't want to give the impression that I'm just interested in the sort of liberal thinking, because I get a lot of that.
Sure.
That, you know, you're somehow just interested in
the
dissidents.
You like the people on the fringe, none of the people on the inside.
I mean, they're pretty interesting, but and they're more newsworthy, to be sure, but I am also interested in people who, you know, we had Chase Peterson on
who
the show, the former president of the University of Utah.
Okay.
Remarkable sort of philosopher, lovely guy. Talking about his faith, his deep and abiding faith. And he's never really wavered. He's a really an amazing guy. But sorry, there was a question, and I know I was getting towards an answer, but it was my favorites. And so,
yeah, your favorites.
So Joanne, I love. My favorite interview actually was a young Mormon, when it wasn't young Mormon, who was a Mormon man by the name of Gene Jacobson, who had, as a young Mormon farm boy from Idaho, went to World War II and got caught up in the Bataan Death March and somehow survived it.
Oh, geez.
And wrote a book when he was really young called, now it's escaping me, We Dared to Survive or something like that. But he came in and, you know, he's such a lovely guy. Do you have time for a quick story?
Uh-huh.
So we give our show, I've told this story a few times, so if you've heard it before, forgive me, but we give our show grades. We started about 5 or 6 years ago giving the show grades. Because, you know, you want to be able to say what works and what doesn't, and then when it's like, why was
nothing
that
ever works on ours, so we don't ever do it. It's like
you
half,
want to be able to say, why did that work or why did that not work so well?
Right.
And we've only given 1A, and that was with Gene Jacobson. And I've talked often about the fact that I don't know why it worked. I think it was simply because he was this really authentic, lovely guy. And he told me this story mm-hmm. that I think explains why I loved it so much. And I don't even know why I was so taken by it. But he tells this experience about when the Allies had won the war. And he was in a Japanese labor camp with a sadistic, brutal bastard of a commander.
Mm-hmm.
And had gone through just unspeakable things. And he tells the story about how they were out on the parade ground in the morning. And this camp commander gets up on the podium or whatever and says, the war is over, the Allies have won. And Gene tells the story about seeing the guy. And he said, I felt sorry for him. He was in tears, the man, the camp commander.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I really felt for this guy. And he said, Doug, I've always been a happy guy. I've always been a happy guy, but that was my first experience with joy. Like he said, I remember feeling a sense of joy that not only I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to make it. I'm going to make it home. I'm going to make it back. But he said the sense of joy gave him this impulse to forgive the commander. And he talked about, he said, I don't know if I had any right to forgive him,
right.
But I found myself forgiving him. And he said, and I found myself, all the hatred that I had felt for the Japanese just completely evaporating from him. And to me, I don't know, it was such a powerful, lovely story from this guy. That was my favorite interview, I think, of all time. It was the only one we've given an A to. And it's just because I think when people tell a story, when they're willing to tell a story, you know, and give themselves to you, that to me is really powerful. That was my favorite. Still is.
Yeah.
Well, we hope that this podcast has nourished and strengthened your body.
And when the time comes, you'll travel home safely.
And if you were sick or afflicted this week, we hope you will return and listen to us next week.
And in the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you
on the back row of the cultural hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat on the back row.